They didn't wipe out any resource anywhere because they're only in one place for a short amount of time, let's say a year. When things are just starting to get scarce, they go to another part of the forest and they let the first one recover.
In this episode, you'll hear about traditional methods of the Waurani people for living in sustainable harmony with the rainforest. Hi, I'm Karina Basket. Wandering Nature is a program devoted to exploring ecosystems and discovering nature's wonderful and fascinating creatures. Because these are in exotic locations, it's also about the adventures of travel abroad. The Waurani are a small group of indigenous people in the Amazon rainforest in Ecuador, about 2,500 people. For thousands of years, they lived in almost complete isolation from other tribes. Traditionally, they were semi-nomadic and survived by hunting and gathering. Like all indigenous jungle groups, they have an extensive and intimate knowledge of how to use the plants around them.
I'm Chris Canaday. I'm a biologist from the United States. I've been living here in Ecuador for over 19 years, working in conservation projects. And now I'm here in the Omaeri Ethnobotanical Park Conservation Project. It's called ethnobotanical because we teach about the traditional uses of plants. The name Omaeri means nature of the rainforest in the Waurani language. The park was founded over 15 years ago by my wife, who's a Shuar Indian, together with two French women. They formed the Omaeri Foundation and bought these 15 hectares when most of it was just grass for cows. And then they started planting the most important plants to Amazonian Indians. Now it almost looks like a natural forest. We also have traditional houses where we teach how the Shuar people live and the Waurani people. We also offer natural medicine based on the plants and the Shuar knowledge of how to use them.
Chris Canaday is the guide coordinator at Omaeri Ethnobotanical Park. He spoke with me about Waurani culture and explained how they worked in harmony with nature to use the rainforest as a renewable resource. If you've heard anything about the alarming destruction of the rainforest, you're probably not used to thinking of it as renewable. But the Waurani teach us that it is possible for people to live with the jungle rather than over-exploiting it. Before we start, Chris mentions kapok cotton a couple times, which you might not have heard of. Kapok, or sebo, is a tropical tree whose seeds are surrounded by a cottony fiber. And when you hear thunder, don't be alarmed, it's just the interview.
Waurani are the people who used to be called the Aucas, which is an insult. It's a word in Quechua, the language of the slaves of the Spanish, that means savages. They were treated as savages because no one had any peaceful contact with them. Anyone who came into their territory was quickly killed. With these palmwood spears that are up to 3 meters long and are made out of a very, very hard palm wood, called chonta pambil. This palm wood can be sharpened almost to a razor edge. Then the main point has really sharp edges and sometimes barbs to keep the spear from being able to be pulled out without pulling all the guts out. The other extreme of the spear is also a point, but much simpler, still sufficient for anyone who tries to sneak up from behind. Another reason they were considered savages is that they didn't traditionally wear any clothing. And the truth is that it's more practical to live in the rainforest naked because it's not cold during the day, you're in the shade of the trees, and it rains a lot. 15 minutes after the rain stops, the naked Waurani is dry, and we're still wet with our clothing. They actually have a tiny piece of clothing. It's just a string they make from kapok cotton, from the kapok tree. They tie the string around their waist, and men put their foreskin under it, so their penis is held up while they're running through the forest past all the spines and insects, which might be a good idea. Women wear the same string, but they don't have anything to put under it, and they didn't put leaves or anything. They didn't feel ashamed of their bodies and just live very naturally. The fact that they both wear the cotton string around the waist is one more sign of equality among the sexes. They dress exactly the same. They wear the same balsa wood earrings in their stretched out earlobes. They wear the same achote, bright red face paint for festivities, and they wear the same feathered headdresses. The Waorani language is totally different from all other known languages, and genetically, it's known that they're very isolated from the rest of people. And it's been found that their immune system is significantly different. I don't know the details on that. And in the first years of contact, they were studied medically and found to be among the most healthy people in the world, with no trace of heart disease, allergies, cancer, or any of those things. The Waorani only have contact with outsiders as of about 1960 through the work of evangelical missionaries from the United States. The first missionaries to come in were all killed, and they were all men. Later, female missionaries were successful. There's still a clan of Waorani that refuses all contact with the outside world, and they live exactly as we're describing. They're called the Taromenani. It's not what they call themselves. This is what the other Waorani call them, and it means people from the forest. They live in the southern part of Yasuni National Park, and there's only about 100 of them. This is just a rough estimate based on houses being seen from the air and things like that. Waorani house can be about 5 meters long or up to 10 meters long. It's built with leaves that don't last very long. We'll talk more about that later. It's very dark inside. It's all enclosed with leaves. This way, to come in or go out, you have to push your way through the leaves, which makes noise, which announces people. And once people are inside, their eyes have to adjust to the darkness, so people inside have an advantage. They build this way with the house all enclosed with leaves because it can be cold at night, especially since everyone's sleeping in string hammocks. So this way the wind can't come in, it keeps more heat from the fire in, plus enough smoke to keep the mosquitoes out. Also, in the same hammock, mom and dad and all of the small children sleep together in one package. This way they conserve their body heat more and expose less skin to the insects. And they still sleep this way many times with up to 8 people in the same hammock because they like it and they're very cuddly within the family. The house can be up to 10 meters long, as I say, if there's 5 families living there. The 5 mothers are sisters. So each house is a club of sisters, and each one has her own husband. Although sometimes 2 or 3 sisters might share a husband, and this is just to have fewer men in the house potentially fighting among themselves. Also, if the man is a strong warrior, he'll sometimes steal women from his enemies in the other clan and have more wives. But despite all that, the normal thing among Waorani is just one man with one woman. One of the most surprising things for us is that everyone in the house just forms one big happy family, and they share all of the resources brought to the house without anyone having the last word on everything. Among them, men, women, and children are equally valued, and many of the activities they just do together. The only things that are strictly in the hands of men are the hunting and the warfare. Traditionally, there was a lot of warfare, because there were over 6 different clans of Waorani, each with their own territory and no peaceful contact among them, just fighting to defend the territory, avenge the previous attack, and sometimes to steal women. The spear is also used for hunting large animals that run on the ground like the peccary or the tapir. Their other main weapon for hunting is the blowgun, which is also up to about 3 meters long. It's made with two pieces of the palm wood, two long strips, with the hole in the middle carved into each one of those strips, roughly, and then it gets polished with vines and sand and water until it's smooth after it's put together. What they shoot is a fiber from a palm leaf. It has a ball of kapok cotton toward the back of the dart. This is to plug the hole so that when people blow, it pushes it forward. They can blow the darts up to 40 meters away with a lot of precision, and it doesn't make loud noises that scare the animals. When they hunt monkeys, they put a poison on the tip made from the curare vine. This is the best muscle relaxant known in the world, and it's still used in modern hospitals. In fact, they were using it in modern hospitals before they even knew what plant it was. They just knew that there was this stuff that they bought from Amazonian Indians. To make that poison, they have to scrape the bark off, gather it together, run water through it like they're making coffee, and boil it down till it's very thick like paint. For more protein, they also have their fish nets. The fish nets are made with the same fiber as the hammock. This is extracted from the new leaf of the chambira palm. It has to be boiled in water, dried in the sun, and then spun on the naked leg, and it comes out just like factory string if you know what you're doing. The fish net is used almost always together with fish poisons. Plants that are mashed up, put in the water, and then the fish can't breathe. So they stop swimming, and they're carried by the water to where someone's waiting with the net. And so this is very practical, and it's not so terrible as it sounds, because if the fish gets clean water, it can breathe again and swim away. Also, all of these plants decompose in the water over time, and it's not making any permanent damage. From the same chambira palm fiber, they make their carrying bags. The bag is carried hanging off the forehead, right on the back, when it's very heavy. And not just the Waurani, but almost all Amazonian Indians carry heavy loads this way. Here we have a natural cloth made from tree bark. In Quechua, it's called yanchama, in Shuar, kamush. And the tree bark is taken off the tree, pounded, washed, and then only these fibers are left, naturally woven by the tree. Now it feels like cotton cloth. Other groups like the Sapara people would use this yanchama cloth for making their clothing. The Waurani didn't bother to make clothing, and they would use this cloth for carrying their babies. This basket is hanging in the smoke of the fire to store the meat that they don't eat the same day. This way flies don't come to it, it's drying out, and they can store the meat for over a month. So to start the fire, we've got these two pieces of wood. We put some kapok cotton on the ground, arrange the thin plank on top of it, and then spin the stick between our two hands. One person going as far as he can, then the next person starting at the top. The stick never stops spinning. For 20 or 30 minutes, it gradually bores a hole through the plank. And in the process, it forms a red coal that drops into the cotton. So they pick up the cotton and blow it into flames. So this is a lot of work. And they would keep their fires going day and night and make new fires, mainly when they make new houses. Waurani houses are made with leaves that don't last very long, and they didn't want the house for more than about a year. This is because they had huge territories with about 1,000 hectares per person. So in 1 year, they would have hunted a lot of animals in the forest near the house. The house is starting to leak water, and they get tired of living there. They burn down the old house, pick up their things, and go walking for 1 or 2 days within their same territory and build a new house where there's more animals to hunt and where 6 years before they had planted the peach palm. A palm tree with very nutritious fruits that look like peaches, that are very actually different. 1 year before they plant bananas and manioc to have those foods at the new place before they move there. Bananas are originally from India and they were brought by the Europeans, and they're so productive that they just spread like wildfire all throughout tropical America, and most of the indigenous people would swear that they've always had them. And that's also how they got their machetes and everything, which are incredibly more efficient for cutting wood than stone axes. So as I say, they build the new house and then they start their new fire. With these movements, they didn't wipe out any resource anywhere because they're only in one place for a short amount of time, let's say a year. And before they wipe anything out, when things are just starting to get scarce, they go to another part of the forest and they let the first one recover. So they don't wipe out anything anywhere, very different from the way Westerners live in the present day.
These Warani traditions are threatened today by oil interests and encroachment by outsiders. There are some very interesting articles online about these issues and the ethics of contacting isolated people, which I will link to on the blog at wanderingnature.com. I'll also link to the Omayare Ethnobotanical Park. The park is in Puyo, Ecuador, and they are always happy to accept volunteers. It's an experience that I highly recommend. Pictures of some of the plants that Chris mentioned are on the blog as well. Wondering how to apply these Warani traditions to your own life? The next episode features the next best thing, a few modern techniques for living sustainably. We'll go beyond recycling and composting and talk about dry toilets, banana circles, and more. Thanks for listening. Find the Wandering Nature podcast in iTunes or stream episodes from the website wanderingnature.com. On the website, you can also see slideshows with photos and audio from a few different ecosystems, read the blog, get in touch, and more. This project is made possible by a Thomas J. Watson Fellowship, which provides funding to recent college graduates to pursue a year of independent, non-academic study abroad. Wandering Nature is produced by myself. The theme music and all the music in this episode is by James Boudreau. You can legally download all the music used in this podcast from the freemusicarchive.org, and there are links to each episode's songs at wanderingnature.com.